Welcome to Cisco Tech Beat, the podcast that explores the people and stories behind what inspires the newest innovation. I'm your host, AB, and today I'm super excited to welcome Denise Lee, VP of the Engineering Sustainability Office here at Cisco. The Engineering Sustainability Office focuses on accelerating sustainable technology development in our products, offers, and solutions, comprising one holistic roadmap with measurable results. Denise, it's so great to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And by the way, we're here at New York's Penn office, which is recently redone, very sustainable, beautiful. We kind of call it a collaboration center, right? Not really an office.
Yeah, it's always so exciting to come here. There's a vibrancy every time you come to this office because you've got a mix of employees and customers on any given day and given hour. It's pretty fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. I try to come here as much as I can, even though I do like working remotely. Just got to put that out there. I want to dive right into your Cisco story because it's really interesting. And you've had a very amazing, thriving career here at Cisco. And in fact, you've been able to shape your career over the years into really what is probably a dream role for you. So I want to jump back a little bit. What was your very first position at Cisco? And how did you make that journey to creating the role that you have now?
You know, I'm actually asked that question quite a bit, given this role is fairly new and I kind of effectively created the job description. And I wish I could sit here and tell you I had this grandmaster plan. It was all mapped out. And that's so far from the truth, right? I'm coming up on 13 years here at Cisco. It's my third, fourth, or fifth role, depending on how you count. And my role coming into Cisco, I was coming from a previous career in consulting, where I had the opportunity to work in kind of any industry you can imagine.
Right.
I had spent some time from engineering, construction, oil and gas, aerospace and defense, pharmaceutical. It was fascinating. It was a great, great training ground
right.
for understanding how all these industries worked. Little did I know, fast forward when coming to Cisco, I first came into operations. At the time, we had boards and councils, for those who remember that. And it was all of internal Cisco's operations. It was mostly what we know as the C-suite today. And what was fascinating, it was a very up-close view working on special projects internally across the company. So whether it was acquisitions integration or what we now know of as our MRR in compensation, or it was transforming the company to be software-led, right? I did a lot of these special projects behind the scenes, behind many doors. Many don't even know I touched them, but I kind of fast forward what we have today,
right.
You know, renewals, enterprise agreements, and we were kind of ground zero for a lot of that. And so I started in operations. I had the opportunity to lead what we now know of as a renewals or CX team. Back then it was software operations, and it really started with the data.
Got it.
So I spent my first time in operations. I then moved on to sales and then marketing, and now I'm in engineering. And at any juncture, none of that was orchestrated or planned. I often like to look back at these sliding doors moments in a career or a lifetime, and really off the luck, the fortitude, the exposure to mentors and sponsors, and really just sort of either getting tapped on the shoulder or identifying a problem that others didn't even know was quite there,
right.
And then raising my hand and saying I would be, happy to help if that's useful. But the thirst of continuing to learn, the openness to problem solving, I think is probably a couple of themes. That and not being afraid to take that, road less traveled.
Absolutely.
Right. Robert Frost's poem is there for a reason, but truly like time and time again, it's like, wow, it was scary making some of those transitions, honestly at the time. And what led to this role, right before this role, I was leading product marketing across Cisco through the pandemic. And if anyone remembers, and how can you forget, the blur and the whirlwind of those couple of years, the world was changing
right.
so rapidly. So it was a great time and exposure to the portfolio. It actually turned me on to how big of a role sustainability started to play in a lot of these arenas and a lot of these forums when you started looking at hybrid work and remote work and other
right.
things that people seem to enjoy. Sustainability became a question up, come time and time again. So I used it as an opportunity to make the hard pivot and go all in.
I love that. And I love that we work for a company that actually allows us to explore these passions and make those pivots and find ourselves and eventually hopefully find that true calling that we have. I want to dive back into the sustainability roles themselves, because it's such a big field. People hear sustainability, and those who are not involved in it think, you know, oh, recycling and green, you know, green buildings. But it's such a huge, huge, really a huge topic. It's a huge, I guess, a huge opportunity in terms of workforce and career. So what are some of the most exciting roles in sustainability? And how do we get young people, particularly those who don't know much about it, excited about maybe finding a career within it?
Yeah. It's funny. I don't know if you've heard this, but they're calling Generation Z the sustainability generation.
Mm.
I couldn't agree more that the younger generation is, you know, we need to bring them in. But I think there's this diversity of balance in the workforce right now in this very unique time where we have four generations still in the workforce.
Right.
But we won't for much longer. Right. That baby boomer generation, I think, has had record numbers of retirement in this last year. Again, the pandemic put a blip in history for a lot of special exception data points and accelerated things. And there are a lot of people coming into the workforce in Generation Z who have never experienced what working in an office environment with a diverse team coming in and just problem solving together or working on things together. And as much as I like working, you know, at home in my sweats as anyone else does, the reality is there is benefit to being together in person from time to time and knowing what that looks like. It is going to evolve and shape how we work.
Right.
So I could not agree more that not only is it important to get this younger generation in, there are also many of the ones who are getting the actual classroom academics around environmental science, sustainability. You asked what roles. The beautiful thing about sustainability is it's going to become part of all of our lives if it isn't already. And so I wouldn't necessarily say there's any particular role. I would say, what is your passion? If it's on the engineering side, if it's on the finance side, if it's on the legal side, there are roles in sustainability that you should just embody and embed into your integrated thinking of how you go about solving problems, how you go about looking at solutions and bringing things together. If there were a couple of areas I would highlight, certainly on the technology side, data science, and really understanding how to measure carbon accounting and looking at holistic systems, right? So not just saying, hey, I want to be a specialist in one thing, while that's good and that's going to be necessary, understanding how the data threads throughout an entire system from hardware to software to the applications that we're using, that to me just opens up a lot more possibilities.
Sure.
And that's really one of the fundamental philosophies behind sustainability and the simplicity of the models that we're going to need to solve this is looking at entire ecosystems.
Right. That makes sense. And the data thing is so important, because I think for anything we do here at Cisco, but I think for all industries, data, you know, data-driven decision-making is so fundamental to innovation, to solving problems, to, you know, pretty much across the board when you want to have an innovative but successful company. So,
right.
So I want to go to something I heard you say at Cisco Live, something about, of all the companies out there that have made sustainability goals or stated them, over 90% of them are not going to achieve those. Tell me more about that.
So I think that the stat you're referring to is that of all the companies that have made goals and commitments out there, over 90% of them in an Accenture survey were found to be on track to fail, right? And the reason is because these plans need to be rooted in data. And because so few customers have a handle on how to measure that data, how they're doing environmental reporting, it's a little bit hard to say we're on track to get there.
Right.
There's also a notion of making these goals and commitments around net zero. That means not putting any new carbon in the environment by 2050. And that 2050 number is a very important number because that's where science says by then, if we don't have a plan, if we haven't reduced carbon to, you know, that 1.5 degrees Celsius number, like there's a lot of science that goes into it. If we don't hit that, we're all like, our species is in trouble. So you're seeing a lot of these. It's hard to know where to follow. Like sustainability, as you mentioned, is you can't go very far these days without hearing something related to it, right? Whether it's a headline in the news, it's a headline in a newspaper or magazine. It really, in the last year and a half, has gotten so much more exponentially present in all of our lives. So I think this stat of why companies aren't doing it, well, those plans are really hard to put in place. If you think about the roadmaps and the permitting it takes to retrofit a building, build a new building, retrofit a data center, figure out where new data centers need to go.
Right.
If you dig into the data, it will tell you we're out of power. We need new technologies and innovation to meet the demands of the performance of what we need from a computing perspective. We have generative AI that's now pervasively entering in lots of technology conversations, and it's an incredibly exciting technology,
sure.
But it's incredibly data intensive and compute heavy. And so we have these opportunities to bring different technologies together for overall ecosystems that are far more energy efficient across power, across liquid cooling or thermal solutions, across design for more modularity and standardization. There's so many different components and vendors and practices and industries that actually have to work together more so now than they did before.
Right.
Right? Before everyone, DIY, you're on your own, just go build it. But what we're seeing is the earlier you bring these things together, the more benefit you can get in unlocking true efficiency inside of a building or a data center or new and adjacent markets that we're looking at. Right? EV charging stations did not exist, 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
That's so true.
And so when we think about the speed and scale that's needed for a lot of these things, there's a tremendous amount of planning that has to go into it. And then commitments to those plans. And that's why a lot of these companies are struggling with, hey, we have this goal. And then they're like, wait a second, how do we get there?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to consider. And I know not every company is capable of doing that. So hopefully, we can set a good example and show how we've been able to do that. I want to talk a little bit more about companies and sustainability, though, because I think there's this misconception out there that sustainability and profitability, they have to be mutually exclusive. You can't be sustainable and also run business. We've proven at Cisco that is just not true. There certainly are good business advantages. So I would just ask you, for anybody listening out there, for companies interested in becoming more sustainable, what are some of the advantages business-wise for becoming more sustainable?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question, because one of the reasons why I made the hard pivot and went all in at the time I did was precisely because that myth that you said, it's mutually exclusive, I saw to no longer be true. So the World Economic Forum and BCG, and there's some other more recent reports that talk about sustainability and ESG goals are actually proving that it's better for business. In the same way that they talk about how diversity is better for business.
Right.
They're saying sustainability is not only better because you are hiring the best talent, you have better retention. Generation Z has been cited as saying they're voting with their money, and companies that have sustainable goals or that have a good culture and philosophy are they warrant better talent, retention, and hiring. You expand that, and we're also starting to see companies have higher profitability and revenue because of that.
Right.
Expand it even further, and you think about where investors and capital dollars are going. Companies have more accessibility to capital and more favorability in all these different indexes
right.
that are starting to become more and more important. So as we look at where the SEC is looking to put their formal role in the governance and the reporting requirements, we know the EU is making strong steps in that direction. Globally, we're all on these same measurements and standards
right.
to say, hey, which companies are really doing this for real? Right. And if you think about the people behind all of that work, I think we're going to start to see that, doing good is not just good for business,
right.
which is great. It's good for the planet. Right. So it's that triple bottom line of people, planet, profit.
Right. right?
But it's really one of the reasons why I took this role is because I started to see that businesses would have a bigger advantage if they really embedded sustainability into their business practices, their models, their products, their solutions, and how they work together. It's really that in negotiations, they call it expanding the pie,
uh-huh.
right? And I think that's the opportunity businesses have, is you can actually grow quite a bit. And it's a win-win-win situation when you look at it holistically.
I love that. Perfect, perfect. As you know, everything that we do here at Cisco is really rooted in innovation and, of course, the end user experience. And the same is true for sustainability. So are there any innovations either recent that you are excited about or things that are coming up that you're expecting to see on the horizon?
Yeah, absolutely. you know, going into the labs and working with some of these distinguished engineers and fellows who have been working in some of their very specific practices for decades,
right,
is such an honor and a privilege, honestly. Then being able to go and talk to this, those same technical individuals at our vendors and our partners and trying to piece it together is honestly one of, it's like a big kid, you know, playing with Legos. It's so fun to build and right. just imagine what's That's possible. Right. Even something like PoE, what is available today, we are redesigning office buildings. We are redesigning building spaces
yeah.
and eliminating tens of thousands of pounds just in one floor of steel, 1,000 pounds of copper. We are opening up all sorts of new possibilities by taking solar right off the window,
right,
plugging it into direct PoE, compact fanless switches in the ceilings, right? Yeah. We have some partners calling it like the digital ceiling.
Right.
And it's just a far more efficient way to not only use power. The concept of networking is not new to Cisco or our customers,
right?
But the concept of networking that energy, right? And using energy networking across those same principles to get visibility of where you're using energy, how efficient that is. And then when you can turn things off so that they're always ready, not always on.
Right.
Seems like really simple, basic practices, especially because a lot of this technology has been around for a long time, but the urgency hasn't been there.
Right.
For anyone listening, I'd ask you the question, you know, do you know how much you're paying per kilowatt hour for your electricity at home? And depending on what part in the world you're sitting, you may not have known the answer to that question 5 years ago.
Right.
But if your energy prices went up 2, 3, 4-fold in the last 12 months, you better believe you know what that cost is, right?
Absolutely.
If you've moved to solar, you know what that cost is.
Sure. That's a great point. And for anyone who's never been in a smart building like the Cisco building here in New York and the others that we've built, it's really impressive to see a machine room that's distributing power over Ethernet. That is, you would expect a building like this and a floor like this to have a machine room the size of an entire commercial floor with, you know, crazy switches. And it's just so beautiful and it's so streamlined. And to be able to go to a desk and just like have everything powered over Ethernet for the most part is, you know, that was exciting for me to see. And I think I agree with you. This is the future.
You mentioned here in Penn 1, I don't know if you've been to that Milky Way room, but all of PoE ports are so elegantly threaded,
right,
braided, and go into this cute little switch box, and it's powering the entire floor. And it's mind-blowing to me when yeah. you think about how much, like a picture of all the steel and copper that was otherwise removed,
right,
how much additional ceiling space you get because all of that cabling was removed. And all of that comes into one, you know, one switch across this entire floor. It's pretty elegant.
That is amazing. I did not know that. So thank you for telling me.
Yeah.
At this past Cisco Live, we heard a lot about simplicity across Cisco's platforms. And I'm wondering, how does that play a role within the realm of sustainability?
Yeah. It's a great point. Simplicity, especially given Cisco's portfolio, is so vast,
right?
Cisco has one of the most diverse, broad portfolios of any vendor out there. Being able to add simplicity at every layer, every level for sustainability is really important because the topic of sustainability in and of itself, as you mentioned, is overwhelming for mm-hmm. most customers. And so we are looking at building in simplicity into the solutions we're doing. We're keeping Cisco sustainable solutions simple.
Right.
Sustainable data centers, smart buildings, internet for the future, or service provider.
Sure.
And then down below, it's industry solutions. Those solutions will stay the same. As we get more sophisticated in developing products and those roadmaps, use cases that can be applied to a building or a shopping mall or a stadium, these use cases will become more and more tangible.
Sure.
And over time, hopefully more sustainable. But that concept of simplicity, it starts everything from a code base, right? Building architecture that is easily used from now and in the future, modularity into even the code base. There's things that you can do across software architecture that is just more simple. More lines of code does not make a better product.
Right.
Simplicity in UX design. We're developing a lot of new metrics around sustainability.
Right.
You want to make sure that how you're designing that into, you know, fewer and fewer platforms so that you're not having a different look and feel when you go from WebEx Control Hub or Intersight or Nexus.
Right.
You want all of these things to have a level of consistency.
Sure.
Building a data reference architecture and telemetry behind all of these products. The data is so critically important. And from a compliance and reporting perspective, it really is everything from a credibility standpoint. So we need to make sure the governance and the data is sound, and that the way we present it and make it accessible to our partners and customers, whether it's in a platform, in our API, there's modularity built in and simplicity built in to every step of that. So the other piece about simplicity, where it plays a big role, is in circularity.
Okay.
Okay. So in a traditional linear model, you make a product, you use it, you toss it.
Right.
It might end up in a landfill in the middle of the ocean, you never see it again.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it's not affecting the planet.
Right.
And so the concept of building circularity starts with manufacturing. It starts with product design. And if we build it correctly, whether it's a second life or it's easy to disassemble and reuse or remanufacture or recycle, we're needing to build that simplicity in.
Right.
Packaging and simplicity of packaging. If you think about using packaging that will never biodegrade versus right. packaging that's easy. I'm sure all of us have had stories about getting a product that's so difficult to open. Maybe you're cutting yourself in the process, you need different tools to open, and sure. there's a lot of waste. Versus you open a packaging where somebody's engineered and thoughtfully, once upon a time, I did work at Apple too, you right. open up packaging. I still have saved some of that packaging
Me
because
too.
It's iconic, right?
Too.
It's a beautiful experience. Yeah. And there's some packaging I reuse because the boxes are just so beautiful,
Absolutely.
Right? And you can be repurposed. And so I think there's just a lot more thought and engineering that's going into the simplicity from the making of the products,
sure.
how we're using them, all the packaging that goes around them, and then what happens after still matters.
Right.
And so we're building that into not only our models, but we need to work with all of the vendors, the partners, the brokers that traditionally play a big role mm-hmm. at the end of life for Cisco products and all of the other products in that ecosystem.
Right.
Somebody told me a story when a data center is going through a refresh, all of the creative things you can do with that packaging.
Interesting.
Because it's a mountain of right. cardboard. I mean, a huge mountain of cardboard.
Right.
And the idea of like, what if that packaging could be reused, right? So there's a whole bunch of concepts that we can start to think through. And it really starts with just those principles of how are you looking at it in a simple way?
Right. I love that answer because it really plays to the heart of the idea about the life cycle of a product, you know, and how you have to be proactive even before you have the innovative design and have the end result. You know, thinking about sustainability from how can we even, make this as sustainable as possible before it even becomes something that's tangible. And I think that's really important. And I know through some of the stuff we've done in the newsroom on stories on packaging, reducing the size of packages so you don't have excess cardboard, you know, removing certain plastics. It's so important to keep that in mind too. So I love that holistic approach to how we achieve sustainability from our design to the end product. One of the things, and I normally mention this on my podcast with my guests, one of the many things I love about Cisco is this focus on employee wellness and happiness. So I always like to find out what people do when they're not, you know, expending energy on work-related tasks and items. Do you have hobbies or activities that really bring you joy outside of the workplace when you need to relax, unwind, reach your zen place, whatever makes you decompress?
Yeah, I know a lot of people often say, like, you know, you're so passionate about your work. I really do love what I'm doing right now. There is a whole human beside outside of that, the work. I have two girls. They'll always be my little girls. But I have two girls who are both really into the performing arts, specifically ballet. So I spent a lot of time.
Wow, yep.
At the ballet studio, and I've become a backstage mom on many occasions. You know, but really, if I have some extra time, I love getting out to the outdoors.
Yep.
And there's a reason why us Californians, you know, pay the high prices we do and are grounded there.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I can get out to the outdoors, whether that's hiking, taking pictures, it's the easiest way to quickly decompress and get some physical activity.
Absolutely.
So you can often find me on the trails or just walking around. Sometimes late at night, I've been known to bake. Mm. I'm a big baker. I love being able to create something with my hands inside of, you know, an hour or two. And there's always lots of little mouths around to feed. So
that's awesome. Love that. I can relate to the outdoors thing. I just, if I can just live in the woods at some point in my life in a tiny house or a camper van, I'll be very happy. So love the outdoors and baking. Yes, please. Anything that's baked, I'll eat it. So I love that. Well, that was an awesome talk, Denise. Thank you so much for coming in. I'm actually really excited, mostly not just because I have you here. That's huge for me, but also the fact that we could do this in person.
It's been an honor and a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much.